Welcome to Parents' Perspective. 10-year-old Randy tried to close the front door quietly behind him so he could slip down the hall and into his room unnoticed. Unfortunately, his dad was standing right in front of him, a sheaf of bills in his hand. "What happened to you, young man?" he asked, taking in his son's torn pants, badly scratched arms, muddy T-shirt, and a face smeared nearly equally with mud and blood. Mumbled Randy. Well, that dope Al and his buddies began to call Stan, Lou, and me names, and, well, one thing led to another."
"It certainly did," his father observed. "Sounds like you guys let your fists do the talking."
"Yeah, well, you gotta stand up for yourself, right, Dad?" From a parent's perspective, how can we help our children understand and embrace the importance of nonviolent behavior in socially productive ways? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest deals with kids' violence and the learning of nonviolent behavior skills all the time and can offer concrete suggestions for us to learn and share with our families. Daphne White is executive director of the Lion and Lamb Project, which helps families find alternatives to violent toys, games, and entertainment. A former journalist, she recognized that violence is a learned behavior, and she organized the Lion and Lamb Project to do something about it. She has one son, 13 years old. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Daphne.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Would you tell us a little about the Lion and Lamb Project and how it originated?
Sure. The Lion and Lamb Project is a national grassroots parents initiative working to stop the marketing of violence to children. I started it back in 1995 as a mother of a young boy, and watching how he and his friends played and how much he was influenced actually by media. At the time, it was Ninja Turtles. Now it's kind of Pokemon and Power Rangers and Spider-Man's coming out. Children have been learning kind of a false message, which that heroes are violent and the way to be heroic and powerful is to be violent. And I decided to do some research and look into whether that was a good message to give our children, and was really shocked at the research that I found.
Spider-Man is back?
Yes, and there's a Spider-Man video game that's out now, too.
Spider-Man is from my 31-year-old son's childhood.
Yeah, they keep bringing them back.
So you said you were shocked at what you found. What did you find?
I found that violence is a learned behavior, and that media images, both television, video games, computer games, arcade games, toys, movies, the whole media culture that our children are growing up in, is one of the very powerful ways that children learn violence. Obviously, it's not the only way. Obviously, there's real violence in our culture. We're at a war right now. There's domestic abuse. You know, there's violence in the streets. But media violence is definitely one way that children are taking in these lessons from when they're very, very young. And as very young children, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, when they can't yet tell the difference between fantasy and reality, they're learning that violence is fun, you know, from all these television cartoon programs first and from the toys that go with them, that it's funny. And about one-third of the cases I read, the violence is portrayed as funny. You know, you beat someone on the head, there's a laugh track. It's harmless. The character just gets up and does it again. The same with video games. You kill them, they come back. And the same with movies. It's fun, it's funny, it's entertaining. Often the violence is against women. And there's often, in a large percentage of the media violence cases, there's no consequence. I mean, the quote-unquote hero kills someone, beats somebody up, leaves them on the street. The guy's quote-unquote bad guy. He's left to die, to bleed. The action moves on. And in real life, as a mother, I found those to be very disturbing images. And I was kind of shocked when I started reading to see how, as a culture, we've just accepted that. We don't even see it because we all grow up with those images.
Were you seeing any of this at home?
If you watch the children today and what they're playing, often they're playing what they see on television. After they watch a Power Ranger episode, a Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, a lot of the Japanese anime programs, they're going to act out what they see. I mean, any mother or daycare provider, you know, knows that. And unfortunately, what's happening is that not only is it on TV, but the TV is basically being used to market product, i.e. toys, to reenact it again. And then there's also video games that now come out, and then there are also toys promoting the video games. So the average child spends 4 to 8 hours with media per day. That's either a television, a video game, a computer game, a Game Boy, you know, any of those products, or, you know, popping a movie in the VCR or going to the movies. And unfortunately, a very, very large percentage of what boys in particular take in will be these kind of violent plots where violence equals heroic.
Well, that goes back to the first story that we told, which is the kid says, you got to stand up for yourself, right, Dad? And I'm thinking of all the movies that kids see from middle school right on up through adulthood, really, of, you know, the heroes that we have are the Clint Eastwood, Charles Bronson, Might Makes Right, and Sacagawea kind of thing.
Yeah, and actually one of the first statistics I ran into, which was in one of the research studies, is that we actually have the most violent culture and country on earth when measured in terms of aggravated assault, rape, homicides. I mean, obviously we have guns in this country, which a lot of other countries don't. But even if you take that apart, just the level of uncivility is by a factor of 9 higher than the 900% higher than any other of the industrialized countries. It's
shocking.
Mind-boggling. We have more people killed each year by violence in this country, not in a war, in this country, than were killed at the height of the Vietnam War in 1968. And we just accept that as kind of normal, quote unquote. I mean, we have murders every day. One of the things, as I was thinking about doing this work, was in the early 90s, there was a lot of crime, and teens were shooting each other over, you know, I remember sneakers and coats and stuff. And I was finding some of these stories on the back of the Metro section, you know, and the Washington Post. And I'm reading this and thinking, gee, I used to be a journalist. That's what I did before this. This could be, you know, why is this not on the front page? I mean, this has become like a routine, just, you know, another body stuffed in a garbage bag found in a dumpster behind some apartment building.
So we're putting up with this as a part of our society. It's just
exactly. It's just life in the city.
It's ironic. A couple of years ago, we were privileged enough to visit with a family in the Middle East, in one of the Arab countries, and the family was very westernized, and one of the sons was very good friends with my youngest son, and we talked about possibly having this child come visit us in the United States. Wouldn't that be nice? And it's a very westernized family, and they wanted to have real good ties with the West. And when we suggested that visit, they said, oh, no, we can't have him come to visit the United States. It's too violent there. Something might happen to him. And we said, oh, tisk, tisk, that doesn't really happen here. It's a lot of headlines and that kind of stuff. And then very shortly after that, we had the business of the Capitol policeman being shot. And that's right in our own hometown. And so,
well, plus all the school shootings that started in the mid 90s. I mean, so many people are saying violence rates are down, and they may be overall from the height of the cocaine epidemic in the early 90s. I mean, that was kind of a high, and it had to do with drugs. But if you compare interpersonal violence in the 90s, you know, or even more recently with the 60s, for example, it's like in a different, totally different level. And it keeps inching up. We have, I think, something like 2 million people behind bars in this country today.
I don't know.
We also imprison a higher percentage of our population than any country on earth. And we still have a higher crime
recidivism
rate.
Recidivism and so forth.
Well, yeah. Well, and so, you know, it just seemed to me as a mother and as a journalist and someone who was used to communicating information, when I read this, I thought, how come we don't know this? Why don't parents know this? And why, to me, it seemed like one of the ways to change it. I think it's kind of late to change, you know, a criminal kind of behavior when a child is a teen or an adult. I mean, you're talking about recidivism. It's really hard to break that cycle. But I thought if we could start with young children and teach them different kinds of values when they're young, teach them that violence is not the best way to solve problems. It is perhaps, you know, in dire circumstances, the last way to solve problems. But there are many other skills children can use and families can use. And if we start teaching our children that at a young age, that would make a huge difference.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of violence prevention.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Daphne White about violence prevention and the Lion and Lamb Project. You're talking about violence being a learned behavior. What should parents know about dealing with violence on TV and in the movies and video games, as we were discussing?
Well, the most important thing for parents to realize is that until children are about 8 years old, they don't understand the difference between fantasy and reality. That's why they might believe there's a monster under the bed, or if they're Christian, they may believe in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny. I tell parents to think about Winnie the Pooh or Calvin and Hobbes, and even as adults, we can kind of remember a time time when our stuffed animals had a life of their own. And it's a very fantastical time when children are children, and it should be that way. And that's just how their brains operate. So parents often think, oh, my child, my four-year-old is smarter than other four-year-olds and my child. Well, tell me they know the difference between fantasy and reality, and please let me see, you know, X that you don't want them to see or play with. They don't. They know how to mouth the words, but their brains just work differently. And there's a wonderful book called Mommy, I'm Scared by Joanne Cantor that talks about what children do and don't understand at different ages. For example, young children are often scared by a clown, if you've noticed. Mm-hmm. And I was always confused why, you know, a clown is friendly. Well, when they're 2 and 3, they're terrified by clowns. So nobody teaches us this about child development. If you understand that, that children don't understand the difference between fantasy and reality, then you can understand why it's so important to keep them away from violent images. Which as adults, we know, oh, that's just a movie, that's just ER, or that's just Hill Street Blues, or that's just whatever. Children don't see it that way. To them, what they see on TV and what they see in your house and what they see on the street is one fabric of reality. It's all the same. Another thing parents need to understand is that children today see an average of 8,000 murders and 100,000 acts of violence before they graduate elementary school. Not high school, elementary school. That's the average of 4 hours of TV a day.
That's unsupervised television watching.
Oh, even if it's supervised, it's kind of like putting toothpaste back in the tube. I mean, first of all, most parents don't actually watch television with their children. But even if they do, let's say they're sitting down and watching wrestling together or they're watching something violent together, the child is still impressionable. They're still getting those images in their mind. And the television is such a powerful medium, and it can obviously be used for good as well as for violence, but it is a powerful medium, and it's much more powerful than the parent sitting there saying, that's bad, mm-hmm. but obviously enjoying it with the child. So a number one advice to parents is to minimize as much as possible how much television their children watch, unless it's, let's say, public television or a program they're really sure about, because even if they're watching cartoons, there's a lot of violence in cartoons. And even if it's the same cartoon you watched as a child, look at it again and notice what kind of messages are being given. Also, obviously, especially in today's world, you might be watching something or the child might be watching something that seems suitable and then a commercial comes on that has advertising a very violent movie or video game, or even the news might come on, unfortunately, nowadays. Also, for your child's brain development, reading and listening to stories on tape or talking to parents or drawing with crayons, any number of things we used to do as children or our grandparents before there was television is much better for your child than watching TV. So the more you can minimize television, the more problems you cut out. Also, because television is always hawking products to children, and you'll be saving yourself a lot of trouble and saying, no, you can't have that toy. No, we can't go to McDonald's. No, we can't do all these things. So that's number one, is cut the TV down as much as possible.
Would you go over in a little more detail what kinds of play and what kinds of toys actually encourage the acting out of violent behavior?
Okay. Actually, on our website, we have some criteria called violent toys, nonviolent toys, what's the difference? So it kind of gives guidelines to parents. The website, by the way, is www.lionlam.org. And if you look on toy/booklist, we have guidelines. The toys that are good for children are the most open-ended toys for young children. That would be crayons, blocks, you know, cups. I mean, even kitchen pots and pans. You know, it doesn't need to be fancy. You don't need to spend a lot of money. Children have an active imagination, and they will entertain themselves. The kind of toys to teach violence, on the other hand, are often toys that are based on television programs that have violence in it, such as Dragon Ball Z, Power Rangers, Transformers, the robot programs, the wrestling programs. They're often tied into a program. And another problem with those toys is that instead of the child using their own imagination to create a play or to create something they're doing, they're just imitating television. They're not even thinking. They just have the toy, which looks like the television. They imitate the television, and there's no learning. There's no imagination. There's really, and they'll play it again and again the same way, and they get bored with it very quickly.
I raised 3 sons, and when the oldest son was very young, we didn't have any guns in the house. I mean, toy guns. Of course, we didn't have any real guns. And he used to make guns out of Tinker Toys and sticks he found in the backyard, because he learned from other kids. Go bang, bang, you're dead. And then ha ha, you know, and the other one gets up and runs away. I guess we should have stopped that every time we could catch it.
Well, there's a difference actually between your child taking blocks or sticks and playing guns and when you actually purchase a toy gun. Because if they pick it up and imitating other children, at least the stick and the Lego or whatever will go back to being a stick and a Lego. Mm-hmm. It's not always the toy gun there inviting them to violent play or the action figure. So boys from a very young age, especially, and girls, but especially boys, will pick up something and make a gun if you don't buy it for them. Mm-hmm. But we tell parents that that is normal because of the culture we live in, which we have talked about. And what you do is, you know, you talk to them about it. And you know, why do you feel you have to shoot your friend? Why are you shooting your sister? Why are you shooting at me? You kind of talk about it. People have said children will take a piece of toast and chew it into the shape of a gun. They'll eat the toast. They'll throw away the stick. And if they do it again, you discuss it. But the difference between that and when you buy them a toy gun is the stick, every time they walk by that stick, they're not going to think, let me shoot my sister. So there is a difference. And actually, in the Parent Action Kit, which is a resource we develop for parents, we actually have a lot of questions and answers like this. And one of them is, I don't buy my children toy guns, but they play it anyway. What should I do? And so we actually have written down a lot of the common questions parents have and recommended solutions. And people can also order that through our website and get a lot of really handy tips as to how to handle these issues.
How do you respond to people who believe kids need to be able to act out violent feelings?
Children do need to act out violent feelings, angry feelings. Obviously, repression doesn't work. Hopefully, children should not have too many violent feelings. They might have angry or frustrated feelings, unhappy, sad feelings. And also, actually, in the Parent Action Kit, we have a section about talking about feelings, and we have different faces, you know, and I've seen posters and little magnets where you can put them on the fridge. So there are ways to discuss feelings. Why do you feel angry? And ways to handle feelings often, such as drawing. I mean, I've read a lot of research that if you give a child crayons and say, tell me how angry you are, and they'll sit there and it'll make something really angry. And then you say, wow, you're really angry. You know, draw me another picture. And after a few minutes of drawing, they kind of start feeling somewhat better about it. And then maybe you can talk about it. But young children normally don't actually feel violent. They might feel angry.
Good distinction. Yeah. We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of violence in the media.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Daphne White about violence in the media and the Lion and Lamb Project.
How can parents teach nonviolent interaction skills to their kids? This is a big hurdle because then the next step is, okay, so how do you do it?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the only way to do it is by example.
I mean, don't throw the frying pan when you get upset.
And try not to hit your children, because if you're hitting or spanking your child, which unfortunately about half the parents in this country, from what I've seen of statistics, still believe that's a good idea. If you're doing that, though, you are teaching your children that when all else fails, or even at the slightest provocation, you're bigger, you're strong, you're going to hit them. Well, it's kind of hard to ask them then not to hit their brother or sister, not to hit the dog, not to bite their friend, etc., all of which, you know, obviously as soon as they get into preschool or daycare is very unacceptable behavior. There's a lot of research. A lot of parents think that's the only way I can control my child is by hitting them. I mean, they run into the street, I grab them, I hit them, that got their attention. Well, actually, it's not the hitting often that gets their attention. It's how frightened you are that they ran into the street. It's the look in your eye, it's your concern. It's not necessarily the hitting that will get them not into the street. And there's been a lot written and a lot of research. And if you even think about those of us who were spanked, which I was, my husband, or most of us, you know, remember being hit with a belt once or twice. I mean, it has been done for generations. But if you think about it, when you think about your parents, feelings of love don't well up in you when you remember. And neither do feelings of, I'll do better. I mean, feelings of rebellion and anger is what most of us feel. And I've talked to a lot of parents, and when we explore the issue of hitting, they remember that the most effective discipline their parents had was when they maybe isolated them from the family. You know, they had to go to their room. I mean, there are consequences for misbehaving, and discipline is important. But physical violence has been shown not to be as effective as parents think it is. And there's been a lot written about it. And, you know, people can read some of the books written about that.
Was there a specific hurdle that you found that kids really had to overcome when they have to learn interactive skills that are nonviolent after being in a different kind of rut?
Well, it is hard, but like I say, it's really by example. I think children have a really high hypocrisy meter, you know, and they know. I mean, if you're telling them violence is bad and then you're hitting them or spanking them, or if the mother's being abused in the home, I mean, kids can see. Or if you're a very aggressive driver, and I mean, I know my son picks up on periodic, you know, road rage, you know, you cut somebody off or you curse them. I mean, they pick up on that and they say, well, Mom, how come you do that when you drive, but you tell me I can't use a word like that or
better
whatever.
To ask.
Yeah, so yeah. The hurdle is, unfortunately, as adults to change our behavior, and the hurdle to industry is to stop speaking out of both sides of their mouth. I had the head of the Toy Industry Association tell me once, I didn't let my child have toy guns at home. And then with the next breath, he's defending the industry, selling toy guns. They keep saying it's up to parents.
You talked about things that Lion and Lamb offers for parents to access. Can you tell what specific things parents might want to request?
Sure. First of all, we have a website, which is free and which has a lot of information on it, and that's www.lionlamb.org. And one of the key materials that can be ordered from our website is called a Parent Action Kit, which is three small folders with a lot of little sheets in it, so it's very easy to read. You can pull out the one you want and read it in a few seconds. The first section is called T is for Television, V is for Violence, simple things parents can do to protect children from media violence. The second one is about toys, and it's called Violent Toys and Not Child's Play, transforming children's war chests back into toy chests. And the last one is Resolving Family Conflicts Peacefully, Handling Conflicts and Anger at Home and on the Playground. It has a lot of tips for parents as to how to handle their own anger, because if we can't handle our anger, we can't really teach our children how to help their children. And each of these three sections has a list of other organizations which deal with particular issues related to the topic, a bibliography, different books. And our website also has some links to some wonderful organizations. We also do parenting workshops, again, that go over the materials in the Parent Action Kit. And we also co-sponsor violent toy trade-ins around the country with groups that want to kind of make this visible and take up a collection of violent toys and build what we call a peace sculpture with it, kind of swords into plowshares kind of idea. And if I might say something, for people who are in the military, and obviously the military has guns, and you know, if you go to war, that's a violent enterprise. What is important to explain to children in military families is that when you're in the military, there's a discipline involved. It's not like a violent video game or television where you just go around shooting everything in sight and you gloat and you have fun and it's something like entertaining. I mean, as military families know, people get killed. You have to shoot other people. And I know a lot of soldiers have nightmares the rest of their life about some of the things they have seen. It's not funny. It's not entertaining. And it's not something you necessarily want to introduce a 3 or 4-year-old to. I mean, if they grow up and want to grow up, you know, and join the military, that's a very serious decision. But it's not one that's lightly made. And what you do in the military, it's not something that you don't joke around about it. You shoot under orders and you stop under orders, and there's national security, et cetera. So it's different than playing around with violence. And so our motto is that violence is not child's play. And we have actually a lot of military families who support that. And actually one of my staff members, her husband's in the Navy. And it's important to explain to children the difference between being in the military and what's involved with that and just running around the neighborhood, shooting at your friends with toy guns. That's two different things.
Daphne, what resources other than the Lion and Lamb Parent Action Kit would you recommend that parents could take a look at?
Well, we do have a bibliography on our site and in the Parent Action Kit. I mean, there are many, many books. All the topics we touched on today, anger management, conflict resolution. There's a whole lot of research that we just touched on briefly about how violence is a learned behavior. We have actually a research page on our website. For example, the American Academy of Pediatrics just in November of 2001 issued a fantastic short statement on media violence and how it's a learned behavior, how strong the correlations are. For example, they say the connection between media violence and actual violence is stronger than that between cigarette smoking and lung cancer. And for years, for 30, 40 years, the tobacco industry denied that link, just as right now the toy industry, the video game industry, the movie industry, they're all denying the link, and they're also mounting a big effort right now to debunk all the research, because I think there is so much research now. It is so strong. I urge anyone listening to this to go to their school system and ask, do you have a conflict resolution program? Or there's also character education. Do you have something for children at all the different grade levels? Is it implemented? And is it followed through? I mean, some schools will kind of have something, but it's kind of separate from the real life of the school. and you do it in class and the kids kind of laugh at it. And that's not what they practice when they're in the hallway or in the cafeteria. They're still bullying each other. So, you know, we need to get serious in the schools about not just saying violence is bad, but giving children other tools to handle the conflicts that do arise every day.
So it's really teaching children another way of looking at the world rather than looking at someone as an adversary, looking at someone as perhaps somebody who has a problem that you then have to work together to solve.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe you have a problem sometimes. I mean, what I'm learning is, you know, when there's two different people or three different people, we have different needs. And we all want to get our needs met. And how do we do that? And I think when we're teaching children, it's like a win-lose, you know, situation. And it's more like, how do we get to more of a win-win situation where you get some of what you want and I get some of what I want? And that's the real world. Nobody gets everything their way all the time.
Well, we so appreciate Daphne White being with us today to help make the Lion and Lamb Project available to all of us and to clarify some ways to prevent violence among children and young adults. Thanks so much, Daphne.
Thank you. Also, if people want to call the Lion and Lamb Project to find out about our training, order materials, also become a member because we are a nonprofit organization and we need the support of parents and organizations. So you can call us at 301-654-3091. We're located in Bethesda, Maryland, outside of Washington, D.C. And we do actually have members and supporters all over the world. But to keep going, we hope you'll join too.
That's wonderful.
Would you repeat the phone number?
And the phone number again is 301-654-3091.
Our gift for our first caller today is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.